The crosses of St. George are flying all around me. Gareth Southgate, the whole of England is with you. Oh, it's saved!
Everybody, this is the Vassals of Kingsgrave recording the second, already the third, but the second published of our World Cup 2018 episodes. Today we are going to review the round of 16 matches and the quarterfinal matches and maybe preview a little bit what we think is going to happen in the semi-finals. My name is Bina 007. I'll be your host today, but as I know the least about football, I'll be talking the least. I am joined by Matt.
Hey, it's Blue Armour on the forums.
By Noah.
Pop Day in the forums is coming home.
It is coming home, Pops. I love it. I'm so excited. By Lee.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lee, Chaotic Neutral in the forums.
That was very loud and deep and profound. You might want to speak a little quieter next time. And,
okay.
Yeah. And by Shoeshiner. Hopefully, we'll dial in a couple minutes. He's running a bit late. So, where to begin? There's so much excitement. England through to its first semi-final in 30-odd years. I'm very excited. Whisper it quietly. Don't jinx it. Could we go all the way? I don't know.
We're probably we're probably
like the worst team out of the final four, but I don't care. I'm starting to believe. It's very exciting. But what I think we'll do is we'll go through the round of 16 matches, and then, you know, as we do the round of 16, we'll do their quarterfinal and their semi and kind of try and keep it relatively sensible in how we do this. So let us start off with, what was the first round of 16 match? Was it France versus Argentina, I feel? Which was
Uruguay, Portugal.
Was it Uruguay, Portugal? Okay. So the first one was...
I mean, it was those two.
Yeah. So, which is weird, because on the BBC it shows France, Argentina first, but you're probably right.
Yeah, so, so they were they were lower down the bracket officially, but they showed that game first on that day.
Yeah, okay. So Uruguay, Portugal 2-1, I think predictable. Uruguay just a stronger team, Portugal really one man. Any comments on this match, boys and girls?
No, the only big thing was the Cavani injury, which led them to lose. Like, there's no way they could win without him.
100%. Which is sad, because I would have loved to see a true competition between a full-strength Uruguay in that quarterfinal match. And I just feel that was a fairly boring match, and it was a match that shouldn't have been. And it was just, it's the kind of rub of the luck in a tournament, I guess. But that was sad for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that it had a real big impact on that France game, the Cavani injury.
It's interesting. If we talk about kind of both these matches together, where it's interesting going forward, just because, you know, France, in my opinion, had, you know, fairly, you know, easier knockout stages, you know, with the injury and then facing, an Argentina that's all over the place. So I feel like they haven't been, you know, truly tested yet, whereas Belgium has gone through two ringers of a
100%.
Games, it could work, you know, against them with not being tested yet, or it could work in their favor where they haven't really had to.
They're not exhausted yet.
Yeah, exactly. They haven't had to dig deep quite yet. So,
although that France Argentina match, I mean, emotionally was a roller coaster, and I feel for pure excitement was probably the match of the round of 16, and maybe the match of the tournament. I mean, it was a great match to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say. Say Belgium, Japan was probably more, slightly more exciting.
Yeah, in fact, I didn't actually watch that live. Pop's thoughts on this group of four teams, this bracket?
France Argentina was intense. Yeah, I would agree with that. It was probably the game of the round of 16. You know, Messi's magic was not enough.
I
did fear for France a little bit for the fact that they actually conceded three goals against this Argentina team. So they're definitely not.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Yeah. So and even the goals were just so sloppy from Argentina. You had just one, like, that got bundled in by Makedo and I can't even remember the other two. They're just so non-eventful.
Wonder goal by Angel Di Maria, and then the last Sergio Aguero.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that was, because that Di Maria one was in the first half.
Yes. And the other one was Messi to start the game off.
And then with the Uruguay-Portugal game, you had two absolute beautiful goals from Cavani. One was just pretty much from one side of the pitch to the other to Suarez, and Suarez just put in this wonderful ball into Cavani, just thumped it in, and then Cavani with his own treat as well. The ball coming towards him and then side sort of curling it around, which is such it's a special goal, but couldn't replicate in that in the next game. In fairness,
And as much as I hate Suarez, those two are fun to watch, you know, since they've played together since they were kids. Like, that's
both of them 31, and then you've got the other striker that replaced Cavani in the France game. He's 31 as well, so that's unfortunate for his entire career for Uruguay.
Just had these two people.
He must be other circumstance.
Hey, I think we've been joined by Bing Shushana. Do you want to say hi to the listener?
Hello. Hi, I'm Bing Shushana on the forums.
So we're discussing France, Argentina, and Uruguay, Portugal. Any thoughts on these matches?
I think any game involving Argentina should just be thrown out of the equation for considering how the other team is, because Argentina is like a vortex of chaos. They're not only bad themselves, it makes the teams playing them actively worse as time goes on. There's such a tactical confusion that the other team also becomes confused about why is this team so weird? So they start playing weird. Like France in every other game was much more defensively oriented, and it's just in this game suddenly they concede three goals.
Yeah. So, but these matches went the way we thought, right? We all thought France and Uruguay would go through. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did everyone think Uruguay would go through?
I kind of thought Ronaldo would drag them through that one. I thought Portugal would get through there, but I mean that's what happens when you rely on one guy.
It's one guy versus two guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Math doesn't check out in your favor, Portugal.
Although at least Uruguay has a decent defender in Godin in comparison to the two like mid 30-year-old just catastrophes waiting to happen in center half, Font and Pepe.
True. Okie dokie. And so we then get France meeting Uruguay in the quarterfinal, which I have to say, I know they had an injury. I know Uruguay had a major injury, but I still thought this would be closer than it was. And it just felt Uruguay didn't turn up and France just romped through. And I found this a bit disappointing to watch, actually. Bit of a non-match. And I hate it when an injury so radically affects the match play. Any other thoughts?
Invisibly cleared as well, because they didn't really have too much pressure in the forward half. Uruguay trying to get the ball off of the French defenders, and that's where Cavani is so instrumental with his work rate. I don't think there's an elite forward in the game with his work rate as high as him. It really is incredible, and to not have that in such an important game. So you're basically letting France actually get it into their second third relatively easily, so without much of a press or challenge. So for me, that's significantly influenced the match, which is unfortunate. But you had the great goal, great header,
and mistake by Varane,
and then followed
the mistake
by a well
pass
saved by Lloris. Like, that could have easily been 1-1, but just he's clawed it out of nowhere, and then from then on in, I don't think Uruguay had a decent chance.
Well, the Mislera thing just basically destroyed them when Mislera fumbled the ball into the Griezmann shot.
There was no coming back from that mentally.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a shame, because otherwise he had a great tournament.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Top three of the keepers for me.
Yeah.
That whole the Karras 2.0 kind of thing. I do have this thought mindset that regardless whether they're 1-0 down or 2-0 down, they're still going to be attacking the same way. So as long as they still lose 2-0, it's like that. It's still a 1-0 game, if that makes sense, because they wouldn't have changed their attacking style. And because they didn't get the goal back, it didn't really matter in the end.
Yeah, it turns out you can't really replace Cavani with a guy who got relegated with Middlesbrough 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Fancy that.
Yeah.
You guys rate Cavani too much. His finishing is atrocious for club football.
Yeah.
Well, no. So here's the thing. Cavani goes hot. The finishing of Cavani goes hot and cold. I mean, the guy has over 20 goals in every single League One season. Just look at his history.
Yeah, but he plays in France.
Plenty of people play in France. Most of the French roster played in France, right? That's where they come from. But no, he runs hot and cold sometimes, and people just remember the misses more than the actual good finishes. But it's not just about his finishing though; it's about the fact that he's a forward that also defends really well.
Yeah, he does hold up the ball well as well. He's a good link-up man.
He fits Uruguay's system so perfectly, and you just take that out and replace him with Christian Stuani, and it's just not the same.
Yeah, and I do agree with his finishing is suspect at times, but I think that his work rate makes up for a lack of finishing, and that's why you've got Suarez there.
Okay,
Suarez is an animal. Sorry. Oh. I just had to throw that in. That man is a beast. I'm an Arsenal fan, but I have to admit he was a force to be reckoned with at Liverpool, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Single-handedly almost carried him to a title.
And I'm so upset that he didn't take a nibble of anyone, even in the frustration.
He's well behaved now. He doesn't bite people anymore.
Yeah, he's docile in his old age.
Yeah, he just
he's like Mike Tyson. He's just become a cuddly old guy. Okay, is there anything more to say about that group of four? Should we then discuss?
Yes. Mbappe.
And the little shit, just after, so I bore with him all through the group stages, did fuck all in my FIFA fantasy team, same. I even had as my captain, I drop him, and then he's like all over this like a bad rash, I'm like, you little treacherous French bastard. But yeah. I'm happy for him, he's doing really well.
The thing is with Mbappe is, he scored those goals against Argentina. Argentina decided that they don't want to, they want to put Marcos Rojo one-on-one versus the fastest guy in the entire tournament. How did that turn out?
I don't know. He reminded me of a certain young Frenchman from Monaco who came to the Premier League and tore it to shreds.
He's not going to Arsenal.
He nearly did.
He nearly did.
That was when Arsene was there. And now we've got no chance.
Right. I think we should now skip over the next group of four matches and do kind of logically the pairings of Brazil, Mexico and Belgium, Japan. So Brazil-Mexico, I think, was one of the most anticipated pairings. I thought this was a great match to watch. I was surprised Brazil won 2-0, but it is what it is. And Belgium-Japan, everyone. Belgium won 3-2, but I thought Japan were fantastic. Belgium is a great team. Belgium and Uruguay were my hot tips for this tournament. Belgium, I think, might win it now. But Japan, my God, they can take real pride from their performance. Boys, thoughts on these two matches?
Well, Japan definitely made up for that atrocious end. I can't remember who they were. Was it
Poland.
That's it. Yeah, the one time that Poland get a win and they just pass it around for the last 10 minutes and go through on yellow cards. I mean,
lack of yellow cards. Yeah, I think
first time in history. Yeah.
Yeah, I think even their players themselves were a little ashamed by what happened there and just really desperately tried to make up for doing that against Belgium and may have overcorrected it, because then when they should have been trying to kill the game off against Belgium, they kept attacking, and that was a little bit naive.
Yeah, very.
But amazing to watch.
No, I respect them infinitely more. So yeah, this is my favorite game of the tournament because it was two teams that ran for the full 90 minutes and both tried to win the game in 90 minutes rather than taking the last 20 minutes of the game to either hold or play for overtime or penalties or whatever nonsense or get too tired or, you know, they both poured their hearts out on the pitch. Yeah. And, you know, it's as close to a buzzer beater goal as you're ever going to get. Just a wonderful match. And if all soccer matches were like that, I would probably watch it more.
Marouane Fellaini is, I mean, he is the most awkward. He's the most awkward player I've ever seen.
He's all elbows.
Yeah, but he's also incredibly awkward to defend. You show this guy on, he's like, what do I do with this asshole?
All you should do is just be as tall as his elbows, and then you're going to get a foul. So you'll be
there. On corners, this guy just like barges in, and like he does that a lot.
Yeah, he is an animal. But I mean, couldn't be a worse player to score the winner against you. Well, unless him and then Nasser Chadli. Fucking hell.
Yeah. Oh, Chadli. Who's only played a handful of games this season because of injury. So
literally on your hand. Counting on your hand.
He's at West Brom now.
Yes, he just got relegated with West Brom.
Don't go relegated, so.
Former Spud's doing so well.
hey, come on, look at that Belgian team, look at that England team. It's coming home because of Tottenham, so thank you. in that Colombia penalty shootout, Tottenham 3, Arsenal 0, come on.
Exactly. Brazil-Mexico, thoughts on that match?
Mexico, they did well in that game. They should have never played Brazil. Screwed up in our group games in the last game so much. They were never going to beat Brazil, let's be honest.
Yeah.
In terms of just sheer individual talent, that's what Brazil beat them on. Just in terms of tactics, I think they actually pretty even throughout the game, but it's just they couldn't mark Willian in the second half.
But it was really, like, if you look at the match stats, it's fascinating. Like, Mexico actually had slightly more possession.
Yeah.
They had about the same pass accuracy as Brazil, but Brazil had 10 shots on target and Mexico had 1.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the difference, right? Like, sometimes the stats actually do just speak volumes. And
well, that's the quality of the forwards on Brazil versus Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was pretty obvious.
At the time in the forward half that they've got on the ball as well, in comparison, where a lot of the Mexican strikers in the final third, they'd have pretty much next to no time, where the final third for Brazil, they'd be able to like pass it around the box. But in that first 20 minutes is pretty much where Mexico had the majority of their chances, and they had complete control of the game until a lot of the play acting really stopped and slowed the game down and got the ball back on Brazil's terms. And that was the most unfortunate thing from this World Cup is Neymar on the ground. I used to have like this, the way that you had like Messi and Ronaldo at the top, and then you used to have Neymar and Suarez, and to a certain extent a while ago, Bale just below that, and then you got like Mbappe, Kane and so on. But I think now Mbappe would overtake Neymar. Neymar might even drop down a bit, just because that he's playing in France, so he hasn't really got, doesn't have to exert himself all that hard. Especially when you've got Cavani doing all the work for you, and that he's just on the ground before the quarterfinals. I think everyone was aware that he was on the ground for a total of 14 minutes for the entire World Cup.
Ridiculous.
And just with the Japan game, all credit to Japan, but Belgium were lucky to get back into a Vertonghen like looping header that he's trying to put back in the box, and it's just creeped into the back post. But both goals from Japan were real, real quality as well.
Absolutely.
But you can't put 7 players into the box in the 92nd minute and not hope to not concede. So they are making their own downfall. But I mean, credit to them for at least trying to win it there and then.
Absolutely. I respect that. And I think Belgium's going to be, it's going to be fascinating to see how much stamina they truly had or have, I think, going forward. So this takes us to the Belgium-Brazil quarterfinal, which was 2-1 to Belgium. And interestingly, Belgium go up in the 13th minute in the own goal, 31st minute, and then Brazil get a late goal. But again, on the match stats here, I think it's fascinating. Like, Brazil had all the possession, all the passes, all the pass accuracy. They had all the shots on target. 9 versus Belgium's 3. Belgium just made it count, right? So thoughts on this match, boys and girls?
Roberto Martinez. Are deceiving. Because when Belgium went up 2-0, they just basically packed it in invited.
I don't respect that at all.
Well, that's been attacked the whole game. So Roberto Martinez is some sort of mad genius or something, because he deceived everybody with his tactical formation. The entire tournament, he was playing this weird 3-4-3 with wingbacks who are really just wingers. And then for this Brazil game, he submitted his team sheet. Everybody thought it's the same formation, except it's different. Everybody was playing in slightly different roles, actually a 4-3-3. He has Vertonghen as a left back, Meunier dropping back as a right back, Chadli as a central midfielder, Lukaku as a winger, De Bruyne as a false 9.
But also, don't you think it says something for the players that they have that flexibility of mind as well?
No, it does.
I mean,
it does.
It's like Martinez can have the tactics. It doesn't mean the players are going to have the flexibility to execute. Noah, do you want to chip in here? I hear your background sounds.
Yeah, sorry about that. What was it? He managed Everton and nearly relegated them, if I recall correctly, and they had to bring in Big Sam. And I feel like based on that, I could probably get Belgium to the semi-finals with that team. Like, it's not hard. And clearly he's either a mad genius or he hasn't got a fucking clue what he's doing.
The previous manager, Mark Wilmots, couldn't get this guy to beat Wales.
I suppose. But I mean,
and you even had De Bruyne at the start of the tournament questioning Martinez's tactics as well, so
I mean, I guess he's got Thierry sitting next to him to give him a bit of credibility. Because all the players are probably looking at, like, listening to his team talk and just looking at Henry like, yeah, are we supposed to buy this crap?
It's like, what are we really doing, Thierry?
Yeah, and Henry just gives him a little nod. He's like, all right, well done, Roberto. Just go sit over there now. I'll give the real team talk.
Here's the thing, though. The tactics actually make sense. When you think about it, because Lukaku was attacking the fullbacks, which was Brazil's weakest position, because the right back who replacing Dani Alves, and he was just boss that guy around. Eden Hazard used his speed, and of course the weakest part of Brazil in that game was the central midfield, because Casemiro was out, so they had put in 34-year-old Fernandinho. So you just packed those three guys into the midfield, and Fernandinho was utter crap in that game, and it worked. The tactics worked.
Yeah. I think you're a genius.
I think
your assessment of Brazil earlier more explains that result, though.
They
rely purely on individualism. You know, if Neymar doesn't turn up, if Coutinho doesn't turn up, if Willian doesn't turn up, then nothing's going to happen. And I feel like this, the next game, obviously Belgium France, is going to be fiery as hell. And I'm intrigued to see if Henry can genuinely support a team playing against France in a World Cup. But that's that aside, I think it's going to be absolutely the real test of Belgium.
I think Lukaku should win a Golden Ball. He's been the best player in his entire tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to be an amazing match. I think it's going to be the really almost like the final in a way. France Belgium. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really cracking.
With the Belgian tactics, they were absolutely fantastic. Bringing in Chadli in more as a defensive wing central midfielder, it was a really weird thing, but most of it was him and Meunier just teaming up on Neymar the entire time and really shut him out for the majority of it. I think it was Hazard and Lukaku both actually at every single corner they still pushed up against all the center halves and fullbacks. So you pretty much had Fagner, however you want to pronounce him, for Brazil. He's pretty much tried to man mark Hazard, and Hazard has just absolutely destroyed him every single time the ball's come in short. Hazard's got the ball, he's able to touch, turn, and get the foul from Wagner. Lukaku on the right-hand side, because he's having to play up there, so you've really only got Thiago Silva that's free for Brazil. So what's happened is he's pretty much been close to the touchline on the right-hand side, so Marcelo hasn't been able to go as far forward as he normally is, and Miranda's had to pretty much man-mark Lukaku in that game as well. So already you've got like two on three, maybe even two on four, maybe Fernandinho comes back. But and because of that, you've got Coutinho as well that probably hasn't got the freedom as he normally has, with Fellaini, who's he just decided he's going to be a footballer. I don't know where this has come from, like elbows down, feet on the ball. It's ridiculous. But I was really impressed with the tactics and the ability to be able to adjust to a completely different midfield formation. That's the thing. Like normally they've been playing actually quite wide with De Bruyne pretty deep, but he's actually played quite high up, especially in that first half. But once they went 2-0 up, they did hold quite well. And you've got a pretty good three centre halves there. Kompany was the most shaky of the lot, surprisingly, but out of road was just had a fantastic game, and Brazil just couldn't really muster anything creatively through. Courtois with a couple of great saves, but I think they deserve to go through personally.
Yep.
So who do you guys think, if we preview a little bit the semi-final, who do you think is going to win, France, Belgium?
My head says
Hope Belgium.
My head says France. Yeah, my heart says Belgium, but my head says France. It's France is like N'Golo Kante is going to be. It's not Fernandinho. You can't boss N'Golo Kante around or Paul Pogba.
Yeah,
that's going to be the key. If they can somehow solve France's midfield, then maybe Belgium. But I don't know. France hasn't looked good, but they're effective.
Heart says Belgium, and because I would like to see a new finalist, but I genuinely think that France will get through.
I mean, I have Belgium wing at all. I'm going to stick with my pick.
I think it's going to be
just
Belgium.
Just curious how Belgium has shut down Mbappe.
That's not a problem.
I think they're just a stronger all-round team. I think they've been through fire. I think they've been through tough matches, and I think that if they have the stamina, If they haven't peaked too early, then they could really go all the way. I think, and I'd be very happy about that. I think they're a great team.
Yep. It's attrition at this point.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Basically. Okay, so let's go to the other sort of half of the draw and again work our way up to the semi on the opposing side. So let's do our first group of four matches. The first one was Spain-Russia. I'm going to say very little about this because I have feelings that are litigious. And Croatia-Denmark. So guys, Spain-Russia won all full-time, then, you know, penalties, Russia wins. Go have at it. I don't think I'm going to say anything about the match.
Spain completed over 1,000 passes, but did not have a single shot on target in the first half of it.
Okay, I'm going to say something. How do Spain have 80? How does a team of the quality of Spain have 80% possession and not score goals?
Because they don't want to score goals.
I'm leaving it at that.
They love passing. They pass the ball behind the midfield so much. They love passing to each other. If you look at the actual, instead of just looking at the stat of how many pass completed, look at the pass map. How many of those balls actually went directly into the box? Everything was horizontal.
Yeah. So it's a team. It's a very good team trying very hard not to win. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is Spain indulging in their worst excesses. I don't think this is about match fixing. I don't think this is about anything else. This is basically Spain being super indulgent in Spainness.
Yeah, they've been doing it for years, and it's always been their problem.
But during their years in which they just stringed together the two Euros and a World Cup, they had some forward thrust. There was some purpose to their passing.
Right.
There was no purpose to their passing in this game. They just really love passing. And I think that speaks to a lack of an actual coach telling them what to do in the final third. Basically,
far do you think their World Cup performance and them going out is affected by that coach going to Real Madrid before the tournament starts and all that kerfuffle? Do you think that really messed with them, or do you think they were basically a bit overrated and a bit indulgent and were going to not perform well anyway?
I think it's a huge difference. A bit of both. Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of both.
Well,
I think with especially in the group stages, that's where a lot of it's going to be hard to gel for the team to the new coach. Or I think perhaps in the group stages, I'm sorry, in the knockout stages, it would have made a bit of a difference. It would have got a bit more in sync. But in that group stage, like you've 2 days before your first game, your coach goes, and all of a sudden you've got a slightly different message that you have to try and absorb to something that, like, in comparison to what the other coach has instilled in you, that you've got your muscle reflexes just in tune to. And then that has to change all of a sudden.
Yeah, here's
so
the thing.
I will say this as well, as I've got every single tip right for post-group stages. So I did pick Russia against Spain in my ESPN tips.
True.
So
congratulations. I mean, the thing is, so Spain knew about those group stage games months ahead. So they had, the players and their former coach had months to prepare for all three of those teams. They had no time to prepare, really. They had a few days to prepare for Russia. And this is, and Lopetegui, you never prepared for Russia, really, probably. So that has to go back to Hierro, but Hierro's not a real coach. She's just the guy they parachuted in. So they had plans for each, and they had plans for each of those games. I mean, towards Morocco, the kind of plans were falling apart really already, but they just didn't know what are we going to do? Russia is parking the bus. They literally parked the bus right in front of their goal. But how are we going to solve them? They didn't know.
I think one thing with just international football tactics is to the longest part, they generally last only about 4 years. Like, I think that's why you see a lot of these former champions getting knocked out so early in the following tournaments, because you win a World Cup playing a particular style, well, all of a sudden either people are going to emulate that style and also counterattack that style. So inherently, you're not going to be able to play that style for however long. Like, Germany in their youth system brought that up outside of the international, senior international level, so it's not as criticized or picked out by coaches as much, so they're able to win a championship, a World Cup, and not be able to back that up again because people are going to emulate and also counter that style. So whoever wins this World Cup, it's probably going to be the same kind of thing, but for the most part, it's usually like 2.5 to 4 years tactics seem to work. So that's the big problem with Spain is it like this 8 years ago would have been fantastic and teams would have been dragged out of position so easy. Like Russia would have been dragged out of position so easy and they wouldn't have had to have this kind of like you passing just around the box. They would have actually had some sort of pass inside the box because the people would have been pulled out, but because everyone's just aware of it, there's no really need to panic or overexert yourself in defense. So
okay, anything more on Spain Russia or shall we turn to Croatia Denmark?
I did post a photo earlier on about Zuba for Russia when he came off the field and there was a bit of a suspect kind of mark in his elbow.
I don't know about that. I don't quite
subscribe to it, but it's definitely a possibility. I'm not going to just deny that doping maybe not sure. A part of it. But
I guess, but he's still getting subbed out every game because he can't go the full 90. So, like, I mean, whatever, man. Yeah.
I mean, these guys get poked whatever, how many times every game, I don't know, after every game. I don't know if that's evidence enough that they're doping. I'm not even sure that's exactly how they dope anymore.
Yeah, I don't know where they administer painkillers either. So, and that's common practice to have a painkiller injection during a game or just before a game. So, I can't comment as to where that is administered. So, that could just be that. But it's a possibility because of the suspect performances that they're able to like just power through 120 minutes twice in a row.
I mean, let's be honest, Russia didn't have to work that much against Spain.
Yeah.
They never even left their own half. How much energy are they going to exert for that?
Yeah, it was a hugely disappointing match, and I think, yeah.
And they still seem, you know, just as tired as anyone else to me.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, Croatia had, you know, several injuries they were dealing with, but...
we can get to that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Croatia, Denmark, which was 1-1 full time, went to penalties. I think Croatia is another team, a bit like Belgium, that's really gone through the ringer, probably had a harder path forward. So thoughts on this match? Very evenly matched when you look at the stats, but obviously a lot of... anyway, yeah, thoughts on this match, guys?
It's deceiving. They scored two goals in the first 10 minutes and then nothing.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It was a bit of a slog through, right?
I 5 minutes into the game and missed it. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that was the same thing happened to me, too.
And then they won on penalty, and then he scored in the actual penalty kicks. Barely.
It was an uninspiring game.
Yeah. So I think Croatia, again, that's another team that perhaps was affected by the Argentine effect. In that we think that they're a much better team because they played Argentina well. As it turns out, Croatia's most of their attacks for some reason does not come from their central midfield, even though you'd think that all their best players are crowded in their central midfield. They just keep hitting crosses in fruitlessly.
Perisic is a decent wing as well. Being at Roma, and I'm surprised he hasn't been. I think he's been courted by Manchester United quite a few times, but I'd stay there if I was him.
I don't know. It's their attack is kind of one dimensional at this point. I mean, they made it through Denmark. Denmark was also a pretty limited team attack wise. They kind of just canceled each other out.
Yeah, I think Croatia post-group stages have been very disappointing for me. Like, they've had, like, a lot of control of the game, but they've really done nothing with it.
Yeah, and they look exhausted after every match.
Yeah.
Like,
they need to start blood doping. This was a question I was going to ask in relation to last night's match, which was, a lot of teams have their one star player. Do you feel that Modric has actually been really disappointing this tournament?
No, I think Modric
hit. No, just with the penalty kicks.
I just sort of feel like
these past few games,
watching them last night, and we can get into that a little bit later, but I just kind of feel on paper, England shouldn't beat Croatia, but I felt last night's Croatia, we could probably beat.
Well, yeah, you probably can beat them because half their team looks like they're dead.
I think England will cruise through that game.
I don't know about cruise.
Well, I mean, just purely because, like, Croatia's just beat up and they don't have the stamina.
Okay, yeah, so that's the main problem. But I think Modric actually, to me, has been the second best player in this whole tournament.
I think Modric's been
really?
Great. Yeah.
You have to imagine what he actually has to do in this entire game because he is both their defensive midfielder and their attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
But he's a workhorse.
And he still gets
a lot of help from Rakitic as well, which is surprising.
Right. But still, like, he has to do all the work. He has to go back to the defense, carry the ball out, get a few passes through with Rakitic and somebody else, and then get to run up the field and then get a and then try to create something. It's really hard to play his role. And yet he's the only guy in that Russia game who was still running around with a lot of stamina at the end of the game.
Incredible. Meanwhile, it fucking Mandzukic, who I can't fucking stand, who whines about everything, and after 60 minutes, he's just done, like, with the game. Like, he can't run worth shit anywhere.
Yeah, I think with him, a lot of it's age, and he is just super whiny. But with Modric, it just goes to show just how high a world class player he is. And I think he's the biggest regret for leaving Tottenham. Like, I'd love to still have Bale there, but it's Modric that's the one that we really struggle to recover from. And you can see at Madrid just how much he influences games. How he completely controlled that Champions League final. For the most part, he's controlled most of these group stage matches, and post group stage, he's really been the only one that's kind of put in a shift, but him with a lot of the rest of the team do look exhausted, like 2-1 20 minute games, and he's played every minute both and running entire time. So
if anything, the one who's disappointing to me is Rakitic, because he kind of just disappears in certain in games sometimes.
Yeah, he has like one or two moments, but other than that,
that leading game against Argentina. Yeah. It's a good one.
Rebic just played pretty well for me, like from what I've seen.
Okay, so do we want to get into the Croatia-Russia match last night then?
Sure.
Get into the quarterfinal, which I watched at the back garden barbie on such a bad screen, but it's fair to say that I think literally the entire garden, which is all my dad's family, my family, thought that England would have a better chance against Russia in the next match, but we all wanted Russia to lose.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like residual, I think there's just a lot of basic respect for Croatia and kind of like a feeling that Croatia, Belgium, France, all decent teams, no, there's no sort of dishonor in losing to them, but it was definitely a pro-Croatian group. It was a painful, therefore, match to watch. Thoughts on this match, boys and girls?
Yeah, and I was kind of same vein sitting here at home, like just cheering for Croatia, and then they go up in the overtime, and I'm ecstatic, and then that second goal comes to tie it up, just like Jesus, like another round of penalty kicks. Like,
what a goal by Cheryshev.
Which similar to like, I mean, everyone on the pitch, you know, including me at home, was just like, that went in? Like, what the fuck? Because it looked like he sailed it, and then I think even the goalie thought it was going out, and then it just drops.
Even if he had a dough for it, he's not getting anywhere near that. I stood up and I'm like, what? Don't do this. Don't tell me.
Former Real Madrid player. Former Real Madrid star. Not star. He never played for the first team that much. It's just basically, it turned into a brawl. Like, basically like who can endure out endure the other. Basically, Russia took all the skills out of Croatia, and just like, right, who can outlast who.
Poor Akinfeev in the penalties, where he's actually got a good hand to that Modric one, and then it's hit the cross upright, then it's hit the crossbar, and it's just snuck in.
but at the same time, he got saved by the post earlier in the game. So
The Russia. They fought. They didn't. I mean, and the goals they've manufactured. I mean, one was just out of the blue. The other was a set piece goal in which the Croatian defenders just are incapable of moving around anymore.
Well, it was Mandzukic who didn't cover his man. Mandzukic stood there in the box and just watched the guy go. Yeah,
it was done. And the fact that Croatia had like all those injuries really hampered. Like Mandzukic would have been the guy who gets subbed off, but then their right back got injured. The goalie looks like he had hamstring issues.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they were lucky for their goalie to survive that whole match with how many things. And there's a reason that Mandzukic didn't take a penalty kick, because I'm sure his legs were done at that point.
Yeah. So by my count, Croatia is out their right back, their left back. Mandzukic, I don't know how much he has to play. So that's their striker, left winger, hybrid.
I mean, they put, like, they switched him out with Rebic, like, mid-game.
Because he put
Rebic up front because, he couldn't run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I still have a big problem with Rebic as well after the Argentina game, where he's just stomped on the player and not gotten a red for it. Because he shouldn't have played the rest of that game. It was 0-0 at the time, so he shouldn't have played the game afterwards as well. Not that that would have made that big a difference, because Croatia was still just quite good, but that just doesn't sit right with me.
No.
I don't think it would have made a big difference. difference, but the Argentina game, who knows? And Chorluka's been decent when coming in for Croatia. I don't know how it is, like 43 maybe, but...
Yeah, so England has a massive chance. Like, Croatia just may not have enough bodies. They're already down one striker because Nikola Kalinic got sent home. So...
How you can just decide not to come on, I don't know.
Former Blackburn asshole.
What do you think is going to happen to the Russian players now they're out? Do you also notice how Putin turns up to the group stage matches where, like, they're going to almost guaranteed win, but just doesn't turn up to, like, the important matches because he doesn't want to be associated with the potentially losing side?
Right, yeah.
Then Putin just congratulated these guys as heroes.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, it does. I mean, look, nobody expected Russia to even to get this far.
Oh, that's true, right? Yeah.
Nobody expected them to get past the group stages.
Yeah. Well, Egypt was
a lot didn't. Yeah, but no one really expected just how bad Egypt would be.
Right. But like, I mean, this is really logically as far as they could get. They were never beating Croatia. Actually beating them by skill. The fact that this was a draw was already stretching it.
Yeah.
They had nothing going forward other than just sheer luck.
Yeah, logically speaking, I feel like, you know, they earned enough respect with their performance. Yeah. I mean, granted, you know, logic doesn't always dictate in matters like that, but...
Logic plays a very little role once you get to a knockout tournaments.
Right, yeah.
Luck is the single biggest important factor in a tournament.
Right, yeah, but I'm just, you know, kind of alluding to, you know, what effects will happen to them after the tournament.
Yeah.
Without really going into it, because I don't want to.
Golovin's going to get a huge transfer to Europe somewhere.
I was just thinking about him just then, is that in that first game, Golovin was really good. In that second game, he was okay, but since then, I had barely even seen him in the games that I've watched him.
Yeah, well, how good is he, really?
Yeah. I suppose that first game is maybe enough to get him a decent transfer. But
yeah, I think Chelsea and Juventus have both put in bids for him already, so good for him. I think some team is probably look at Artem Dzyuba and think, hey, we can maybe do something with that. whoever team Sam Allardyce coaches next, probably.
Oh, he's made for him.
I don't know what that Brazilian guy was doing on the Russian team, but he didn't look too bad.
I was thinking, what a natural Russian name, that guy.
Yeah.
Mario Fernandez.
So Russian. But yeah, no, they'll go back to their clubs and maybe one or two of them get a good transfer. Cheryshev, maybe he'll actually go to a team where he can play a few more games in Spain.
He actually looked pretty decent. I didn't really see too much of him outside of the goals he scored, but he scored the goals.
Yeah, almost 4 goals. Second in second in a golden boot race right now.
Tied with Lukaku.
Yeah, and Ronaldo.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's between Kane and Lukaku right now, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they did as much as they can.
Yeah. Okay, so does it make sense to move to the other part of this bracket and maybe get into the England matches? I know that Noah's not back on yet, but hopefully he will be for the quarterfinal discussion. So let's get into Sweden, Switzerland, which ended 1-0 Sweden, and Colombia, England, that went to penalties. Jesus Christ. Oh. Let's do Sweden, Switzerland first, and hopefully Noah might be back in for the Colombia, England game. So Sweden, Switzerland, boys and girls, is this the most boring matchup in the World Cup so far?
I don't think we have enough material to wait for Noah to come back.
Pretty much went the way I expected with how we talked about it in our last discussion.
Lucky deflected goal.
Yeah, we fought. I think I said 0-0 penalties. It was one deflected goal. It's pretty much it. So
yeah, and I expected Sweden to win just because Switzerland were down a few players. So
yeah, it's really not that much to say. Sweden, I mean, it's an organized team. They play like a Burnley. I mean, they can crunch some results out, but they have no strikers. Those two guys masquerading as strikers up top. They're not real strikers.
Yeah. I think I saw a stat that said Marcus Berg has had the most shots in the entire tournament and hasn't scored a goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Nice team, I guess, behind the strikers. organized. How many old British tropes can I throw out to talk about Sweden? Because that they're basically like an ancient, like 20 years ago Premier League, like bottom half Premier League team 20 years ago.
Can I tell you how nice Sweden are, right? Like when we beat them, the Swedish ambassador tweeted to congratulate us. I don't think we would have done the same in reverse. And secondly, a bunch of pissed up like English football fans broke into an IKEA in London and started jumping up and down on the beds. And IKEA UK tweeted back, being both Swedish and England, we also wanted to celebrate and we're going to put fish and chips on the menu for £1 in our stores. And you're just like, you guys are so nice.
that's marketing done right.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically we have nothing to talk about that much. Let's get to let's get to Colombia, England, and let's get into how Colombia basically had just decided they couldn't win this and were gonna be the dirtiest team on the pitch and just try and attack everybody. And I was so nervous through the entire match that because we have a really young team, that one of our boys was just going to get frustrated and get sent off with a red card for just doing something stupid in response.
That was exactly what they were counting on.
I was petrified that someone was going to do David Beckham. And it was just, I was proud of them for just holding on and just holding their cool. And just, it was awful in extra time, the first half of extra time, I thought. The psychological, destruction of conceding that late goal to Colombia. We just looked tired. We looked gone. And then when it went to penalties, I just need to explain to the listener that when you're English, and you're English certainly of my age, you've just grown up watching so many tournaments where we go out on penalties and we're just horrific at them. And the whole nation is programmed to sort of tense up and go into a sort of protective turtle shape. And I have a Fitbit, but I can literally tell you how fast my heart rate was. And it wasn't just fast for the penalties, for 40 minutes afterwards, it was still elevated. Oh, nah. And I couldn't speak. It was just horrid. And I feel that I said this to you guys on Skype before the penalties. I was like, if England somehow win this on penalties, it's such a monkey off their back that they may well win this thing just purely on momentum, because it's such a young team. I feel we need to talk about Gareth Southgate as a manager. I think
there's a lot to talk about.
I think for the last 30 years, we've sent teams to World Cup with these absurd expectations of them, usually based around a single player. And this is the first tournament in ages. We had no expectations, and they seem to be enjoying themselves, and the fans seem to be enjoying ourselves. And we know we're playing above our capability. We know we don't really deserve to go any further. We're not ranked that high in the world, but it's kind of you start to believe it. So maybe, just maybe, it's coming home. It's so exciting. But Colombia, England is horrific. It's just traumatic for me just thinking of that match.
Well, okay, so Colombia, if you remember 4 years ago.
Yeah, they did. Up,
I guess.
They did
the same thing. Against Brazil.
When they were losing that game, they just started just trashing people. It's something I didn't remember until I was watching this game. And I realized, oh yeah, Colombian players are awful. They're real little shits.
I mean, there are some players on that team that are really pretty bad. Uribe and what's that guy, the fullback, Barrios, coming soon to Tottenham Hotspurs near you.
No chance.
They're linked. But the thing is, so going back.
He fit in well.
Yeah. Hey.
No, we're discussing Colombia, England, and I've given them the blow-by-blow of my psychological and heart rate trauma. Do you want to talk us through what this was for you? I was telling them on my Fitbit, 40 minutes later, my heart rate was still really elevated. So, what was this
my
for you?
Yeah, I think I had to change my underwear at halftime. It was a fucking tense game. I mean, we'll get to the Sweden game, but I feel like both were completely different experiences.
Oh yeah.
My God. And to leave it so late, and then to get the kick in the nuts at the end. But you know what? It's coming home, and we made it through.
How did you feel about penalties? When you knew it was going to penalties, what was your feeling? Was it one of dread, or did you have secret hope?
I had no hope. We've never ever won a penalty shootout at a World Cup, and with all the best will in the world, I couldn't get the confidence to believe in that bunch of spuds and Manchester players. But you know what? They proved me wrong, and we march on, and it was amazing. I never thought that the hairy big toe that is Eric Dier could ever make me smile, but he did.
It was amazing.
He's good at those things.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what? It was a shocking penalty. And if Ospina stood still, but do you know what? It all went out the window. Arsenal, Tottenham. It was England. Yeah, he was my brother.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
He was my. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do, but do you know what? I'm over it now, and he's my brother, and even Harry Kane, he can come round for dinner.
Well, the one thing that I love about this England squad is that, and with the fans, is that most of the fans have actually, for once, thrown out their club loyalties and actually followed the nation. In World Cups gone by, it's been so clicky, and you've wanted your Chelsea players to do well, and then you'll bag the Liverpool players, or if your Arsenal, you'll bag the Tottenham, and vice versa, but all that's just gone. I haven't heard many of my Arsenal friends, and there's too many of them for me to associate with, be able to actually say positive things about Tottenham players, and pity that there hasn't been that many Arsenal players to like talk up with Wilshere being left home. But with this match in particular, I'm so glad that the person that I wanted to come in terms of Jonjo Shelvey, I was a big advocate for bringing him over, but I'm glad for that Colombia game that he did not play, because he would have been the one to knock someone out.
Out
of seven competitive penalty shootouts, England have lost. So, and they haven't won any in the World Cup. So I actually think it was better winning that penalty shootout than winning 1-0 without that late goal. I think that's probably done a lot more mentally for the entire play. It's the harder way to go through, but I definitely think that would have brought a lot more confidence throughout the team,
100%.
The entire squad, the nation as well.
I feel like obviously it's not because it's coming home and all that, but even if we tap out in the semis, it's been a success because we have broken the curse, and no more shall we be terrified of a penalty shootout. And I mean, it's quite ironic, isn't it, that Gareth Southgate is the one who managed the first England team to win a penalty shootout. But do you know what? Football's a beautiful, beautiful game.
It's probably because he's the manager.
Yeah. It's probably the first thing they do at training every fucking day.
I mean, I think there's something to be said, though, for the fact that Southgate is quite smart. And I think there is so much research going on. Like he said, that he has this like deputy coach level of people, and each of them were assigned certain teams before the World Cup, and it's been their job to analyse them. So whoever they get drawn again, they go to that person and they're like, okay, now what's the plan? And I think there's something about just the backroom staff just being probably the best we've ever had to support these young players who aren't traumatised by the history, which is like a lovely combination.
So much faith in your coaching staff.
And something else I've read is that he watched a lot of NBA. And I think, and one thing he realized from the NBA is that the thing that you can most control in terms of making scores is set pieces
100%.
Or set plays. And almost all half of England's goals have been set pieces.
So what do you feel about the criticism that the problem is we don't score goals in open play? Is this going to really...
It doesn't matter.
No, I mean...
It's a tournament. Like, set pieces are
70% of this entire goals of this entire tournament have been set pieces.
Right, yeah. You're fitting the style of the tournament.
Yeah. It's not about putting the most pretty soccer. Spain passed the ball over a thousand times and did nothing with it.
Yeah, actually, that was a comment I was thinking when watching the England match, where they were kind of making an effort to kind of control possession of the ball versus Sweden, but after four or five passes, they're constantly launching it upfield and always trying to attack.
England of 12 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean,
but on the Gratia Heskey.
Yeah, pretty much. Knock it on to Owen. but it's, I mean, I guess maybe it's just a bit simpler than that. These guys play, as you say, it's the first time we've been able to put those rivalries aside. But the players, they don't see these guys very often. They don't, link up and train as a team very often. And a lot of them, I can't remember before the tournament, but how many were getting their first cap or, they played under 10 games. I mean, when Danny Welbeck is the top scoring England striker in the squad, that says a lot about how long these players have been, had to integrate with one another. So I think set pieces are things that you can really focus, you can be a tight team, but set pieces is something that you can certainly drill into your team, and Southgate's done that. He's really won me over this tournament. I was very skeptical. I was upset after Big Sam got the sack, but I was very skeptical. I'm not joking. I would have loved to have seen Big Sam at a World
I don't know.
Do you think he could be playing the type of football though?
Oh my god, it would be the most boring negative. Oh,
if Big Sam played England like Russia, that the Russian game, you would have seen a lot of that. But the thing is, a lot about Southgate is he didn't want this job. This was basically thrust upon him, and he took up the challenge. Like Big Sam wanted that job, like since forever. Like, he coveted that job. He really wanted England manager. Harry Redknapp, all these guys, even like Alan Pardew, these people who have much higher expectations of who they actually are.
I think that's why it works, is because he's a modest man.
Southgate knows he is.
Yeah, whereas he had a modest career, and up until this point he's been it's fair to say a pretty bog average manager.
He stepped up.
But that's what they always say, linking this to Game of Thrones a little bit. The best the best kings are the ones that are chosen, not the ones who win it. Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
Okay, so shall we move on to the Sweden-England match yesterday?
Yes, let's.
Which was, interestingly, similarly tense, because just these matches are for England fans, right? But, Noah, what are your thoughts on this match?
Absolutely shitting it. Sweden felt like such a bogey team for us. But then again, I think if any team, I could find a reason to squint at them and make it out that they're the best team in the world. But you know what? They turned up and they had very little. And I think, I thought this was going to be way closer than it was.
I was surprised at how bizarrely they just didn't really have any real shots on goal apart from a couple. I mean, it was just kind of like, what's going on?
I feel like England had a lot to do with that as well. They actually pressed really high and didn't allow much time or space on the ball, so they've actually had to get rid of it long. And you've got both Maguire and Stones were just eating any long balls up. So
Stones was incredible.
And Henderson's winning everything in midfield. So being able to just get control of the ball quickly like that and then just apply pressure, they did really well. I was surprised. I was like absolutely shitting bricks like for the entire day leading up to the game. But as soon as I turned on the telly, it just dissipated. Just like watching them play, it just felt like they had such control. And poor Sterling as well. The amount of chances he's got, the confidence on the field is absolutely shot. And for once as well, Kane's played in another player. I've never seen him be so unselfish in a game.
It was actually really reassuring to see us win a match with like other people scoring goals.
He was a good link-up man in that game, I thought. He held up the ball well. He was chasing down defenders, pressing high. It was great. I really wish Raheem got his goal, because I think that would have done him the world of good. But do you know what? Overall, I think he had a very good game.
Whenever
he could stretch his legs, he would. And I'm still just astounded at how fucking strong he is. He's tiny, and he can hold off these huge defenders. And he must just have thighs of steel.
Where do you all stand on the Raheem Sterling controversy? A lot of the fans think he's pointless, and a lot of the pundits are like, he's a player's player, and he's actually really good. So where do you all stand on it?
Fans need to get behind Raheem Sterling. That second goal just happened without Raheem Sterling.
Exactly.
He was playing the offside trap. He was the guy playing the offside trap. Fooling the Swedish defenders and then coming back and letting Dele Alli of all people score the goal.
What do you mean Dele Alli of all people? I love Dele Alli.
To be fair, he had a pretty shit game up until that point.
He's had a pretty ordinary tournament as well. He clearly doesn't look fit. He looked probably a lot better in the Sweden game in terms of general fitness. Didn't have that big of an influence in the game. But to go to your Sterling strength point, as someone that also has a fat ass with Sterling and Aguero, we're all just similar type of game styles as well. So being able to just use that massive rear to just hold off people and gives you good balance.
I think the thing with, I agree with that. And I think the thing with Dele Alli is, I think everyone knows he's carrying an injury, but I think there's something to be said for just keeping a winning team together, and there's something about the psychology of them having been through the ringer that you just don't make changes unless you feel you have to. So I think he'll continue on.
How good would you feel being Sterling or Dele Alli, knowing that your manager has so much faith in you, despite all the fans and the pundits not being 100% behind your decisions in keeping Sterling and Alli in the starting lineup? Because there's a lot of calls for Rashford to come in for Sterling and Loftus Cheek.
I don't understand
Dyer for Dele Alli.
Rashford has not done anything. Sterling has done nowhere near anything Sterling has done this season. I don't know why people think Rashford magically would be much better than Sterling. He's been just as wasteful.
Yeah, he's a flair player. I mean, you all know my thoughts and feelings on Danny Welbeck. So,
what else? Danny Welbeck should not go anywhere near the starting the game ever again. Like he had his game against Belgium. That was great.
He got about 19 minutes.
You guys didn't want to win that game, right? So you start Danny Welbeck.
I don't know. I think personally, it's better to go with experience than some, you know, little Man United starlet.
Maybe he's great in the locker room. Stick with this team. Stick with this team. This team is working.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I guess, you know, fame broke.
I think there's a lot to be said. Like, England is all about the mentality and the psychology of doing this. So I would keep them together. So finally, let's preview the other semi-final, which will be Croatia-England. Who do you think's the favourite for this, boys? And what do you think the result will be? Which could be two different things, right?
Croatia.
Yeah, I've got to be realistic and say, well, I really think on paper Croatia should beat us, but I didn't think they were that good last night. So now I think we'll win.
No.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I can't. I don't know. It's heart and head.
Noah, there's three words. It's coming home.
It's coming home. Come on, it is.
Football's coming home.
I don't know if it's coming home, but I think you guys beat Croatia.
I don't think we win it, right? It doesn't matter. We're already winning right now. Like, as soon as we got this far, we're already winning. Everything else is icing.
Right. So many people criticizing Southgate's choice for losing against Belgium. Look at it now. So
I love that choice.
Japan that all of a sudden could play in Brazil and then possibly France. And
well, it's looking like we got to get past Croatia first, but it's looking like we might play them again.
I think England feels like it has gathering momentum, gathering self-belief. I think we're not knackered. We've had one penalty thing, and I think Croatia just looked a bit spent last night. And I know we've got 4 days, but they just looked a bit gone.
And I feel the England-Sweden game was the best England had played probably all tournament. Like, you can take the Panama game with a grain of salt. They're okay against Tunisia, but again, they just defended. You can't take much out of that Belgian game. And Colombia, they were just out in their legs after probably 80 minutes. So it's not much to go by, but they're playing better technically at the moment at the World Club, and Croatia seemed to be struggling a bit through injuries and fatigue and probably not being able to gel so much post-group stages, so there's every possibility.
Croatia's attack is so focused on the wings, and that's just going to play into England's hand defensively. They can't exploit England's one weakness, which is in the center of midfield. They should, but they're not. So far, their play has not suggested that they could. If Henderson stands strong against Modric, Rakitic hasn't done much.
Rakitic and Modric are world class. They're a class above any center midfielder we have.
But they haven't done anything with it. They haven't generated enough offense out of it. I think set pieces. Croatia has shown weaknesses in that area.
I would take a 0-0 to half time, and then I think, like Bina said, they're going to be tired, and then if we can sort of punish them, bring a bit of pace on, bring Danny on, fucking knock a few in.
I don't know about Welbeck.
This is purely for banter reasons, because he's not gonna see another second on the pitch the whole rest of this.
Of course not.
I mean, barring
he's a decent guy. He's not that much of a player, but
he's good for morale.
Their goalie might not be available. He looks like he has a hamstring problem.
Subasic, yeah.
Good to know he's in my fantasy team. I'll take him out.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've already picked up.
I mean, he kept playing and saved two penalties, so who knows? But are you afraid of veteran Chuluka at right back? Are you afraid of Joseph Pivarich at left back? Because that's what they got.
Oh, Chuluka, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time. Fuck.
For good reason.
A decade.
So, yeah, are you afraid of those guys? What do you think those two guys running against Sterling and Lingard's going to look like? Yeah.
I think we'll be fine.
I think set pieces. For them.
And a Tottenham showcase.
I mean, look, if Croatia beat you guys, it's not a surprise. I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, honestly, it's a coin toss. It's a coin toss. It's a coin toss. But face it, I think we'll get beaten by Belgium in the final, so that's fine. But I think we have the best chance we've had in a while of getting to a final. So
I would feel more confident coming up against Belgium than France, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
No, really?
I think the amount of spuds in both teams, we could sort of suss each other out.
Maybe. But
France are flair. France have, and I don't know, I don't like Griezmann, so he'll come out with some jammy dive and then score the penalty or something.
You'd have over half of the Tottenham starting 11 in that game if it was Belgium, England. It's crazy.
I'm gonna run through every scenario about how this is gonna go wrong now, and like, fuck's sake.
You made the semi-finals. You played 7 games in the World Cup. That's
yeah.
Already
we're already winning, right? Everything else is gravy.
It's true. I mean, kind of slight side note, the country is already in absolute chaos. We have had, what is it, like 30 Celsius weather for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And England are at a World Cup semi-final. What is going on?
I remember that with my time in England. I got to like 80 degrees Fahrenheit one day where I was at, and people were fucking complaining how hot it was.
Yeah. Oh my god.
And we've had this for weeks and with no let up. I want to make a general statement now that I think there's something. I've just done a queer eye voc, and I think both of the World Cup and queer eye are united in this one thing, that in a world that's quite divisive, I think they've been quite good at bringing stuff together. So if you look at the UK with Brexit and all sorts of other shit going on, Arsenal, Spurs, this is like one thing that brings everyone together. Like, even people who don't normally watch football, like, it's hard to explain to the listener, if they're not in England, our one listener, like, just how united the country is right now. And it's beautiful to see, because it just hasn't been this way for a long time. So it's gorgeous.
It's the classic dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's partly to do with the nature of this England team, that it does feel young and exciting, and Gareth Southgate does feel like a really nice guy. Hashtag Gareth Southgate would. You know, I mean, we love to hate our football team, but actually we're bizarrely, really in love with them right now. And that feels lovely.
Could not agree with that more.
Bringing the waistcoat back.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other
Have you seen the thing about what he's got written on the waistcoat? Because he's got that weird pattern.
I think that's a Photoshop.
I really hope not, because that is incredible.
He doesn't have "It's coming home" written on his waistcoat, but he should.
I might send him one.
Exactly. Oh, dear. And then the other slightly... the one final talking point I had before my earnest closing is, how do you guys feel about it being 4 European teams in the semis?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I did.
First time ever, but no.
I think that's incredible. When you think of the talent in not just obviously the Americas, South Americas.
Right.
Mexico's okay.
Yeah, they're okay. But also a lot of African teams have some really great players, and I think they've gotten a little bit unlucky.
Poorest World Cup from Africa for 36 years, I think. The first time ever that no Argentina, Brazil, or Germany are in a semi-final of a World Cup ever.
Yep. It's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, it has to be if England's in a semi-final. Nothing can be normal.
It's coming. It is weird. But I love all these 4 teams, actually. I think I'd be actually more than happy for any of them to win. I think we're going to see some nice football, and I respect all of them. I don't think any of them are too theatrical. We all have our moments, but I think they're all going to play some good football, and that just makes me happy in my heart.
Yeah, a lot of the cheats are at the tournament.
Yeah,
it's good.
Which is good, right? Yeah. I feel justice
has
been done.
That's a big thing. Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, despite some sort of fairly lax refereeing. And then I suppose my final sort of, you know, despite all my It's Coming Home stuff and getting all excited, my final earnest point to make is I just saw some of the pictures of the four kids that have been taken out of the Thai cave so far. And they're like, you know, we sing It's Coming Home. This is an actual football team. I really hope they get home. One of them had an England shirt on with three lions.
And I love how that made front page headlines.
And that really got to me. I thought, you know, like at the end of the day, we love football. It's just a sport. So I wish them the best.
Yep,
definitely.
Let them come home. Anything else on these matches or anything else? Life, the universe, everything. Thank you, everyone, for joining. This has been Bina 007, Matt, Lee, Noah, and Bing. We hope you'll tune in, and I guess maybe we'll have another episode after the semi-finals and final to close down the World Cup chat. Hopefully you've enjoyed this, and you'll enjoy the rest of the play. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Maybe or may not be coming home.
By the way, it's gonna be a good final few matches, I think. So that's soccer's the winner.
Oh yeah,
that France Belgium game is gonna be
definitely watch that. Definitely watch that. Definitely.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I hope I'm not too busy at work this week and watch
that. I'm watching this.
Where on earth are you from? We from England. Where you come from? Do you put the kettle on? Kick it.
Right, Bing, over to you for the World Cup trivia.
All right, shall we start with some easy ones first?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I think we just everybody chime in whenever again. We're not going to keep points.
Cool.
Right? All right, so name all World Cup winners.
Brazil, Uruguay, France, Spain, Italy, Germany, England, Argentina.
Yeah, that's it.
There you go. For the win.
I think the biggest stumbling block one would be Uruguay winning the first one.
Uruguay used to win a lot, right? Back in the day.
Uruguay. Yeah. So the next question is, which among those teams have won the most World Cup? Again, easy one.
Brazil.
How many?
Five.
Five. Good.
Five, yeah.
Which team has gone to the most World Cup finals?
Brazil.
Germany.
Yeah, it's
how many times? How many times?
Oh. I'm just going to shove a number at eight.
Seven, eight, good. Eight.
Oh, yes, I'm on fire.
All right, a little bit tougher. Name the only English player who has won the Golden Boot.
Gary Lineker.
Gary Lineker. How many goals?
Six.
Seven.
Six. Good.
Six. Yeah, six. They said Kane tied his record.
That's right. all right, a little bit weirder now, this one. So it has been 20 years since the 1998 World Cup. Can you name two players who have participated in the 98 World Cup who are still playing professionally today?
Rafael Marquez.
Yes.
Nope, he was not on the 98 Mexican.
Damn it,
really?
Nope. He was playing professionally, but he was not.
Oh, right. So who played in that World Cup, still playing professionally, but aren't playing in this current World Cup?
Well, no. They don't have,
just doesn't anyone
have
to. That playing.
Anyone who's still playing professionally today. Two, name, there are eight. One, that's one. Good.
Okay, there's eight.
Who did you say?
Gigi Buffon.
Oh, yeah. Great shout. Ida Gudjonsson.
Iceland never made the World Cup.
Of course.
He is still playing professionally, though, so that's not a bad.
He's always an answer at a sporting pub quiz question.
There's one player. So Gigi Buffon is the only player from Europe who's still playing professionally today.
Ah.
When I woke up, there's one more player from Africa and six from Asia somehow.
Huh.
One player from
the Kawashima, the Japanese goalkeeper.
No. But it is a goalkeeper. It is two, in fact, Japanese goalkeepers from that World Cup.
Yeah. Is it that, not, like, Egyptian goalkeeper, like, 45?
Egypt didn't make the NBA World Cup.
Yeah.
Yes? Think Barcelona.
Yeah, we're nailing this one.
Think Barcelona.
Eric Abidal?
Samuel Eto'o.
It is Samuel Eto'o. God, I was Samuel just Eto'o. I was like, I didn't think he was
Samuel
still playing.
Eto'o. He was 17 when during that World Cup, and he was on the
fuck.
Also, there was also two goalies from the Japanese team in the 98 who are still playing today somehow. As well as Shinji Ono, their star midfielder, who was 19.
Shinji Ono. Wow, he's played in the A-League for a little while.
Yeah, he's now 38 and still playing, still starring in the J-League.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
One player from South Korea, Lee Dong-guk, who used to play for middle.
Yes! Yeah!
For very briefly. He's still playing professionally. And a guy from Saudi Arabia I never heard of.
I won't be able to give you a name there.
Which team has made the most quarterfinal appearances but never advanced, but did not advance past that?
Sweden.
Nope. Yeah,
might be England, you know.
England. How many times?
Yeah.
Four?
Oh, four? Yeah.
No, it's like six?
Eight.
Fuck!
I only made, three semifinals?
And three semifinals, yeah. Wait, let me see.
Like Maradona
for it. Okay, so this is an easy one. Which player has scored the most goals in all throughout in World Cup throughout all tournaments?
Pele?
Klose?
No. Oh, wait, who said? What did you say, Lee?
Klose.
Yeah, Miroslav Klose.
Miroslav, yeah.
How many goals?
Oh, that's right.
14?
A little more.
18?
A little less.
15.
16.
16.
Oh,
Ronaldo was the previous holder with 15.
Right.
Now, which player has scored the most goals in a single tournament?
Ronaldo?
No, this one might be hard.
Is he going to be someone really old, like...
A little,
Batistuta or someone.
Much older.
Or like Bobby Moore or something.
Yeah.
Bobby Moore was never had a much of a... Hmm? I think he's dead now.
What was that? Hungarian.
No, he's still alive. Wow, he's still alive. Jeez.
That's
okay. 1958 World Cup, Jules Fontaine for France.
Yeah.
13 goals in a single tournament.
Wow.
Wow. Jesus.
Yeah. can you now name all the teams who have made the World Cup finals but have never won a World Cup?
Netherlands.
Sweden.
Uruguay won one.
Twice.
Long time ago, yeah. Mexico?
No, Mexico. No, definitely not Mexico.
There's got to be some other European teams, right?
It is another European team.
You're not counting like old stuff, right?
Portugal.
Nope.
Austria.
Nope. Getting closer.
Hungary.
Oh, USSR.
Hungary. Yes.
Oh, nope. Hungary. Yeah, I was about to say USSR.
There's one more. It's hard to guess this one.
Scotland. No.
Scotland. Czechoslovakia.
Right.
Very cool.
Okay, and now this segues to the next question, which is, can you name me five countries who have gone to World Cup finals before who no longer exist?
Well, yeah, so West what? West Germany?
West Germany, good.
And Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
USSR. No.
USSR.
Yeah, USSR. Doesn't exist anymore.
Yugoslavia?
Yugoslavia. Yep, and one more.
I don't know. Is it going to be like Siam or something?
Siam is technically just Thailand. Just another name for Thailand. So, no, it's the same country.
Sure.
You said West Germany, so...
East Germany?
Yeah, East Germany.
Really? They'd made it to the final. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. They made it World Cup. Yeah. Also acceptable are the Dutch East Indies, which is today Indonesia.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Wow.
I guess, Zaire is technically still the same country. Yeah.
These are good. These are good.
Keep them going.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. This might be a little. Who is the youngest player to have played in a World Cup?
In a World Cup,
yeah,
it's probably going to be someone from Brazil, right?
Now, if I
was 17.
It was was Mbappe the one who scored the youngest to score a goal?
Right, at
Mbappe
at
was
19.
Not.
But
to play,
Right, this is too hard. This might be too hard.
Yeah, and he just said Samuel Eto'o was 17.
Why don't you give us the country?
Someone younger.
Like narrow it down to
Northern
country.
Northern Ireland.
Jesus.
No, not George Best. Norman Whiteside in 1982.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He was 17.
Oh, yeah, of course. You're such a bullshit
denier. 17 years and 41 days. Who is the youngest player who has played in a World Cup final, like the last game, the final game? Pele, 17.
Yeah.
Wow.
17 years, 249 days. This is just now me reading out the Wikipedia articles, though. So let's see. Oh yeah, there's one more name. There has been how many? One goalkeeper. Yeah. So the golden ball for best player has been only started to be given out in 1982. Name the player, the only goalkeeper among all these players.
Well, presumably, Oliver somebody Kahn, right? Took a lot of penalties then, or something. Or I don't know. Like, how do you become golden?
It's Oliver Kahn.
Yeah,
the golden ball.
It's the golden ball. It's the MVP.
Oh, right. So it's not the golden boot. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah. What's another one about the coach? About the coach? Oh yes. Among all the current coaches, all the coaches have won the World Cup, naming the only two coaches who are still coaching professionally today.
Didier Deschamps.
The World Cup winning coaches, not
captain. Oh, coaches, right. I'm thinking captain.
Who's the Spanish one?
Vicente del Bosque is not currently coaching a team. He's retired.
Yeah, so it's the German one, right?
Yeah, Joachim Löw. And yeah. I mean, logic suggests recently, but...
I'm tired. I want to go to sleep.
Last one. This is the last question. This is going to be the last question.
Makes sense. Yeah, I have no idea.
Why can't leave you guys running? Like, that's just... Questions came out now. I'm bored.
I'm out of questions soon.
Just start singing It's Coming Home.
It's coming home. It's coming.
Jules Rimet still gleaming.
It's Marcello Lippi. Marcello Lippi for Italy. He's currently coaching the Chinese national team.
Right.
See how that's going.
Yeah, well... So that's it. I don't have anything.
Well, boys, this has been a pleasure for us.
30 years of hurt never stopped me dreaming.
God damn that song.
That song must be like David Baddiel and Frank Skinner must be making so much money. There's like two versions of it in the top 10 right now. And they didn't release a new one for this World Cup, and I think that's a bit lazy.
Yeah, they didn't. Do you know what?
They probably didn't think you guys could do anything.
Maybe that's why everything new that has happened this World Cup, I'm so superstitious and I'm thinking that's the reason why we've gone this far.
I've worn my same England top for all games except for that Belgium game as well. So
it's all on you, Lee. It's all on you.
I've worn a white vest and I've been drinking Stella every England game and it's worked.
Oh, are you going to do that if it's possible final, being a Belgian beer?
Shit, yeah. I mean, it's pretty much an English beer now.
just like half the true. Belgian team is playing England.
Yeah.
The most annoying thing about being Australian and everyone's stereotypes is with beer, and everyone thinks that
Foster's
beer, and no one drinks the piece of shit.
Yeah, I don't blame you, mate. I don't drink Foster's.
Fucking so pathetic.
Well, on that happy note. Right, guys, enjoy the semi-finals. I think they're going to be great matches.
Yep.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. But,
it will be fantastic.
This has been fun. I'll try and edit this. I've got a flight tomorrow, so I'll try and edit it and get it out tomorrow a bit in advance of the semis. And I just got around to putting the other one on YouTube. For some reason, I'd forgotten, so that's silly. But, yeah.
Excellent.
Right. Latest boys. Somebody
that's yelling it's coming home, and I can't quite understand what she's saying.
I think is a really stupid chart is apparently England's got this on and on and on chart, and I think that's really dumb.
It's a on bit and basic. On and on.
Yeah, it's a bit basic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like the one, what was that? I saw a video. It was, it's like winning all the way to Moscow or something like that.
Yeah,
I think like
Gareth Southgate was like conducting the crowd, yeah. Singing it.
Yeah. Quite, I enjoy that.
England, cool. England here in Russia, drinking all your vodka, England going all the way.
Yeah.
And repeat, 1, 2, 3, 4, oh, it's great, yeah. I love it.
Basic. You know, I'm used to cricket where the Barmy Army has real wit, so this is a bit poor, but never mind.
Bina, on a separate time, I want to talk to you about the state of Australian cricket, because, oh.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking pitiful. I mean... Thing is, it's, yeah, okay, let's do that. Let's do that at some point. I'm keen to get more sporting podcasts, actually. I think VOC needs to do more sports. So in general, I'm happy to edit and facilitate that stuff. All right, boys.
I'd love to do some tennis.
Sport. Yeah, I'd love to do a Wimbers one. There's just too... There's too much bloody sport on right now. There's a Wimbledon. There's a British Grand Prix. There's the Tour de France.
Tour de France, yes.
Though. It's like I just haven't got enough bandwidth. And then there's the cricket going on. I haven't even watched the T20 today. It's like, guys, can you sort this out?
Scraping past our house in Zimbabwe.
Jesus Christ.
It's the summer. There's no American sports going on other than baseball, and that's boring as hell.
Yeah.
Oh, the NBA trade season is just going absolute fucking bonkers at the moment. LBJ to Lakers? What the fuck? And he's facilitated trades for other people to go to Cleveland, so he doesn't have to play against them. He's like in like the year 38 team, that guy at the moment, honestly.
Cool. LBJ has to be going to Lakers for a whole season. Anyways.
All right. Okay. Godspeed, England. Godspeed, everyone.
All right, guys. It's been coming fun.
God save the Queen. Me and me mum and me dad and me gran went off to Waterloo. Me and me mum and me dad and me gran in a bucket of Vindaloo.